All right, so Jim, you've been. Well, I'm so excited. It is so good to have you back. Seriously, I'm really excited. It feels like old times already.
It does.
Now, I'm not gonna lie. Even with all this like little bit of trickling of news coming in about Silverchair and stuff, I haven't really been paying much attention to it because I'm kind of like, I'll believe it when I see it. But the fact that we're actually like doing a podcast,
I do know how
kind
you
of
feel.
Means that it's real.
Oh,
so,
that's so cool.
The thing with the producers announced it, I thought, okay, time to jump back in the forums. I jumped on the forums and, you know, made a few, some posts, and then I haven't been there in a while, but I'm going to jump back in now.
Like what I actually said in my video was that hiring a screenwriter, it felt a lot more real for me because like Rillian, when it was first announced, my first reaction was, oh my gosh, it's real, go. Then I kind of calmed down.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of went, how real is this? Is this really happening, or are they just sort of saying it's going to happen, and then it'll just sort of, you know, peter out? And then now the fact that they've actually hired, you know, the two-time Academy Award winner makes it seem a lot more real, even though we don't have a release date yet.
Right. And
yeah, which is why I've kind of tempered my quote-unquote excitement, because I know it's going to be so long before they even start production.
By the way, really quick, I think, Jim Fan, I don't think you've been on a show since part 6 of our Don Treader film analysis in March 2011.
No way.
Yeah, I think it's been that long.
Yep.
Wow.
So this is
sounds about right, though.
This is the return.
It is.
All right, so it really does feel real. Anyway.
So we have a press release, you know, and we have basically, I guess the main thing really is the name, you know, which is what we always go for. That's, you know, it's David McGee. Who's, I'm just curious, what I have seen Finding Neverland. That's really the only film I've seen of his. What films have you guys seen? Have you seen Life of Pi?
All of his films, which he hasn't actually done that many. But I've seen Finding Neverland. I've seen Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day. And I've seen Life of Pi.
I'm glad you're here then. Because
yeah.
I really like.
Why don't we have...
I guess you could say I'm performed on his work.
Well, then what was your first reaction, Jim Fan?
Well, my initial reaction was he hasn't done anything I dislike. And the films that he has done, I've seen and I have liked. And he's definitely very good at what he does. So that makes me feel a lot better. But it's still very early stages.
Obviously, and it's interesting, you know, I even wonder, I mean, he may not even stay on the project. You never know.
The Don Treader was passed around. You know, Don Treader was musical chairs. It was like every so often a new screenwriter was added.
You know, if you go to IMDb, the Incontinent Movie Database, sorry, ever since One of Our Own became cast, we will never forget it. You know, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe has 4 screen credits, including Andrew Adamson. Prince Caspian has 3, including the director. And Voyage of the Dawn Treader, that hodgepodge has 3. It's a certain extent, it's not that you have to take it with a grain of salt. It's just that the opinion at this stage could be worth a grain of salt of this writer, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of, I don't know, my first reaction, again, I feel kind of like you, Jim Fan, is, you know, I'm just trying to think, oh, man, I'm trying to remember Finding Neverland because I saw it once, you know. And on one hand, I think, okay, I liked it. I liked the story. I liked the script. You know, I remember not disliking it. But then I liked Amazing Grace, too.
Which Stephen Knight worked on, right?
Well, I was thinking, well, Michael Apted directed it. Maybe did Stephen Knight
work on that? Stephen Knight worked on Amazing Grace. Stephen Knight being the one we tend to attribute the Don Treader leaked script to the most.
Okay. So again, you know, you kind of think, okay, great. You know, or at least it's not horrible. It's kind of how sometimes I tend to think. It's like, you don't think, is this good? Well, it's not horrible. Is that good? Maybe.
Well, I think I definitely feel better about it than you. I think that this is the first time we've had, it seems to me this is the biggest name we've had attached to Narnia in terms of screenwriting up to now. Now, I know that, you know, screenwriters don't really tend to get famous, you know, very seldom. But you have screenwriters who are pretty famous within the industry.
Sure.
And Dave McGee is a guy who, if you say his name to someone who's really in the know in the industry, be like, oh, the guy that wrote Finding Neverland. You know, oh, the guy that wrote Life of Pi. You know, like they would kind of know. He got nominated for Oscars for both of those. I don't know. My sense is that it might be that what I said in my video is maybe this is the Anne Peacock. Do you guys remember Anne Peacock?
Yep.
Vaguely.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you remember the name, or in the initial press release, it just sort of said Anne Peacock's. You know, Walden Media and Walt Disney Pictures producing *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe*. Anne Peacock's writing the script, and I think that's the last we heard of her. And she ultimately is credited. You know, in the opening credits, it credits her, Marcus McFeely, and Andrew Adamson. But she wrote the initial drafts, and then you never heard from her after that. I suspect since this guy, 2-time Oscar winner, has much more of a name than Anne Peacock, I suspect that won't happen. Now, I do think it's possible we'll have – it's very possible, maybe even likely, we'll see other writers get involved at one stage.
Sure.
But I don't think he's going to disappear and be shrouded in mystery as Anne Peacock.
Do you think – here's what I'm kind of wondering because I'm just thinking about – because sometimes you wonder. I wonder about because a lot of times studios are hard. They're not necessarily the artists, you know, who move up in the studio. It's the businessmen who move up in the studio, and they're going to make decisions that might be good artistically, but they are also going to. They're often thinking of it from a business perspective, and I'm thinking about what this says to me. Is I'm just thinking about, like, I'm wondering what you guys think. What this says to me is they want to give the silver chair an air of credibility to the industry. They're not so much thinking about, you know, people, the public who might be attending the film, going to watch the film, you know, coming across the story. Oh my goodness, well, maybe I'll go watch this movie. Yeah, they're not thinking about that. They're thinking about, you know, actors, directors, other scriptwriters, production people who maybe were turned off, don't want to have their name, wouldn't want to have their name attached to, you know, I don't know, so some people did like Woods Don Treader, but like just looking at it from a Rotten Tomatoes perspective, you know, from the critics' perspective, the Chronicles of Narnia series was declining, and I think what they're trying to do here is I think this is kind of a move to give it more credibility. What do you guys think?
Well, just going off of looking at the movies that he's done, I believe Miss Pettigrew is also one of these, but Finding Neverland and Life of Pi were both adaptions of books.
Yep.
And I've not read Life of Pi, but from what I understand, the adaptation from book to film, people have said that was something that they never thought could successfully be done.
Yet another unfilmable book that got filmed.
Exactly. And he was able to pull it together in a way where not only was it they were able to film it, but it actually made, you know, a really decent movie.
Yeah, a movie that resonated with a lot of people.
Yeah, so, I still need to see that.
Yeah, so my impression of for them going straight for David McGee would be that they're looking for someone who is going to be a fairly heavy hitter as far as adaption goes, and they want because they've got the book, and I don't know if they are still going to try and tie it into the other films or if they're going to try and start fresh, but I think they realize they've got a bit of a challenge, and they want someone who's going to be able to work through that.
Is Finding Neverland a book?
A play.
Yes.
It was a play.
A play. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. One of my first thoughts, and someone actually posted this, someone in the comments section, they're like, I'm just glad they didn't get the guy that wrote Transformers or something. and what I mean by that is just some. And I kind of suspect, you know, no disrespect to Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. I just think they're sort of the franchise kind of writers. It's like, hey, you know, here, studio says, here's what we want. You know, could just turn this into a screenplay. Here's kind of what we're looking to make. And they can kind of get it done quickly and efficiently. Whereas this guy seems more of a – seems like more – probably is more respected as an artist. I hate saying that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Chris Marcus and McFeely. I know you said
you
said you have issues with me, but that's the general reaction seems to be that people are going, oh, wow, this is really interesting. This guy's really good. It's the first, like, it seems like almost like it's the first real writer we've had attached to this rather than just someone who's sort of assigned to just sort of get it done, if that makes sense.
Wouldn't you say, okay, here's a quick question, and I don't want to speak for you guys. My biggest concern going into each film, whether it ended up being justified or not, my biggest concern and fear, and even sometimes I'll say issues with each film, have consistently been screenplay. How about you guys?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I didn't have much problem with Prince Caspian, Lion, Witch and Wardrobe. I felt could have been paced a bit better. Well, that's really more directing. Above Don Treader, absolutely, yes.
Yeah,
That could have been solved by a much better, or a screenplay that hadn't been tinkered with so much. I think Don Treader was the product of too many
Right.
cooks in the kitchen.
And we could. I remember when the early version of the Don Treader script leaked, and the infamous leaked script, which came out in, but I think it was the same. It was like only about a month after Prince Caspian actually hit theaters. This early draft of Don Treader came out. And I was saying, oh, there's really nothing to worry about. This is such an early version. I really believe them when they say it's experimental. I honestly didn't even read it all that closely. And then, Jim Fan, I think you were kind of the one sort of, not exactly sounding the alarm, but you were kind of like, you were a lot more concerned about it. And I think most of your concerns turned out to be a lot more, a lot more true than what I did not imagine it was going to be nearly as close to the leaked script as it was.
I'm
But,
trying to remember. Oh yeah, because there was concept art. And it was like if they got as far as making concept art for it, that means this was pretty deep into the
I
process.
guess it was. I guess I should have learned my lesson at that point, because it's kind of the same attitude I had with the Caspian Susan kiss. Like, no matter
Yeah.
how much evidence kept popping up, I was like, no, there's no way. In my opinion, the screenplay was one of the weak links of *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe*. That was probably the thing that a lot of the other elements of *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe* are really strong. The acting's
Right.
great. It's a great looking film. It's got there's a lot of stuff that's kind of going for it. And I just think the sort of not bad screenplay, but just a little flat. It just needed something to kind of push the next level.
I'm not going to say it's an excellent piece of work like some films, but it's a definitely
Yeah.
a good movie, you
It
know.
does its thing, does it decently well.
And it's I wonder if and again, it's hard to. I want to be careful judging motivations because none of us know what's going on in anyone's mind at this point. But I think, what this is accomplishing, whether maybe they intended to or not, as I think this screenwriter choice is addressing. It is addressing, I think, some concerns fans have because, again, even going into Silver Chair, there was talk of, leftovers from the Voyage of the Dawn Treader script,
Greenness.
The script for Voyage of Dawn Treader got to the point where I would have vastly preferred the leaked script to the one that we got, because at least the leaked script
Remember you saying that.
made a bit sense. And I know that's heretical to say that, but it's true. The leaked script actually had like a kind of well thought out villain and everything tied together and there was a reason. And when they cut the Lady of the Green Kirtle out of the movie, then they suddenly had to add in some other things, which didn't make sense, and
So,
it just kind
Tim
of
Fan,
all,
what you're saying here is that you wish the Lady of the Green Kirtle had been in the Dawn Treader movie. That's what I'm gonna take. That's what
I'm what I'm saying is, if
I'm.
they
It's
had
too
to
late.
have
You
the
said it.
script
It's
that
recorded.
way, if I had to choose between two evils, I would prefer the leaked
Let
script
me.
evil.
Artistic people. This is the problem when you have a kind of the business side of it too, in the artistry. And what I kind of hope is I would rather kind of have a more coherent, if somewhat flawed vision of a story, then say a whole book committee trying to, make it. Well, I want to make it better this way. Well, I'll make it better this way. Because there are problems when, like, sometimes the director or the screenwriter or whoever's kind of the is providing the vision for the story, they have ideas and some of them are good and maybe some of them are bad. And maybe the studio sees they're bad and they try to correct them. But then you end up forcing the filmmakers to make a story that they don't want to make. I think part of what you're saying is it would have been better if say one person had at least a coherent vision for the story than to have all these different like this little like a quilt like a patchwork.
Relatively coherent, I think, is the
Right.
term we want
Well,
to use.
and what I'm
Sure.
what I guess the crux of the matter is, obviously, I prefer to have a good adaptation and a good movie. See Hunger Games: Catching Fire. But I would much, but if I can forgive a bad adaptation if it's a good movie. I mean, I'm not as happy with it, but I can forgive it. If it's a bad adaptation and a bad movie, then there's no point. And I felt like Don Treader was neither a good adaptation or a good movie because there was too many holes in the changes that they made.
The whole dynamic we see again and again that you're talking about, really, and there kind of being too many cooks in the kitchen and everyone trying to, you know, like they have all these needs for the film. Like, oh, it's got to appeal to this audience. And it has to have, you know, X amount of action in it. It has to have this. It has to have a romance. Blah blah blah. You know, they're putting all these pressure on the. Oh, it's got it. Spider-Man 3 has to have Venom in it. You know, things like that. Studio imposed rules. That's the dynamic. I think that we're hoping a lot of fans, including myself, at least have hope that we could avoid on this film because they're going to try to make it without a major Hollywood studio, and we are assuming at this point that they're going to want to make it with a lower budget. When you have a lower budget, like we kind of talked about, you know, in the last Silver Chair News podcast, you know, it usually means there's less money on the table and fewer people involved. They're trying to frantically protect their investment. They're a little more willing to let the professional filmmakers do their thing. And the unfortunate dynamic happens when you have, you know, business people, investors. Who are trying to make creative decisions, even though they because it's their money and they're worried. And they may or may not be remotely qualified to make those kinds of decisions. So when there's not as much money involved, you can just say, let's let these professional filmmakers kind of do their thing.
You know, maybe, because I'm sure that there will be other screenwriters, and I'm sure that the pitch in for this project.
I'm actually not sure. I think so. But I suspect if they're making this outside of Hollywood, maybe there won't be. The kind of standard procedure here is you usually get, you know, the Ann Peacock, that original, hey, just take this book, put it in screenplay form, do your thing. Then you say, okay, this is pretty good. Now let's bring in some other writers, and they can add romance and action scenes, and they can add things that will appeal more to our target audience, and they'll do what they call punch-up. But if we're making this outside Hollywood, you know, on a lower budget, maybe we can avoid that, at least to a large extent.
If I could interview filmmakers and stuff, I would really like to dialogue with, because the vision for a film very much does come from the director, even if he doesn't write the screenplay. It's kind of interesting. I'd like to – maybe you could comment more on that, because I'm interested in, you know, how does that – a director relate vision to screenplay versus the screenwriter himself?
Well, it varies a lot from film to film. And actually, I was just listening to the Finding Neverland audio commentary today, which David McGee and the director and the producer are on, and that seemed incredibly collaborative. Like, almost the part where there were parts where they couldn't quite remember who came up with the idea, David or the director. And there are parts like that. There are other parts where I think the screenwriter comes in, does his job, then he's off to his next job and passes it off to, you know, the director. So it really varies quite a bit. The sense I get is that I just get this feeling that a lot of the Narnia scripts are written under very kind of business-like environments, where it was kind of, you know, there was their job here. Write this. Here's the kind of movie we want to make, Sora. Could you just sort of do this? Okay, thank you very much.
You could almost picture, like, the image I have in my mind is maybe someone, you know, I guess maybe for Prince Caspian, it might have been Andrew Adamson, you know, for someone saying, going to basically sitting in front of a bunch of suits at a table with a whiteboard, say, okay, this story's going to have this and this and this. And then one of the studio execs says, but wait, how old is Prince Caspian? Well, the actor is going to be about 25. Well, I think there needs to be some kind of thing between he and that older girl from the last film.
You kind of imagine that, yeah.
Yeah, and so on, with all these little things. I kind of envision that, you know.
And that's how we get Suspian.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely get the feeling that there's a lot of people who had veto or some sort of influence over this.
Notes from the studio.
Script. Yeah, and some people were producers, some people were the directors, some people were Douglas Gresham, et cetera, et cetera. Lots of people who have influence over the script, which is all good and well, but unless you have one person, whether that be the director or someone else, who has a specific vision for the script, you're going to end up with a lot of issues. And I think one problem with Don Treader, or one of the many problems, was that they had one team that was working on this screenplay, and then someone at some point swooped in and said, whoa, wait a second, you can't have the Lady of the Green Kirtle in here. X her out. So she gets X'd out, and someone else gets left with the task of cleaning it back up.
Picking
to
up
where...
Unless another studio exec swooped in and said, no, keep the green mist. You have to keep the green mist. We need to have a villain.
You never know how these things come about, but it's going to be something along those lines.
I see what you're saying, Jim Fan. All the different people involved and the need for there to kind of be a single vision, though, at the same time, it's kind of a Bryan Singer described it as a funnel. That all these people have their different talents, and they all kind of funnel through him, and he turns it into something that's ultimately coherent. Mm-hmm. And I think that Andrew Adamson, there's actually a quote on the line, "The Witch and the Wardrobe DVD," where Andrew Adamson said, sort of paraphrasing here, but he basically said, "I think a lot of movies fail to hit their target because there wasn't a single vision." He was saying you can't be trying to make someone else's movie; you're just chasing your tail. So there has to be, when it's all said and done, a single idea. This is fundamentally what the movie is. You can't be trying to incorporate a million ideas into it. And so I'm hoping that's what we'll see here. But I do think that David McGee, the way it's coming across to me, is it seems like not as much of a Hollywood. I don't know. I it's kind of changed the image I have of the movie a little bit. It's not just being this, oh, they're trying to milk Narnia a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's really given, maybe this is what they're trying to do, but it's given a little bit more credibility. And, oh, there's something to be discovered here. Maybe he'll do something really interesting. And I just don't think he's the kind of guy who's going to come in and like, okay, bullet points, here's what I have to do, and then leave. I think he's going to really bring something interesting to it. I don't know if we'll like it, honestly. I don't know if we're going to, as Narnia fans, I don't know how close to the book he's going to be. He strikes me as someone who would have all these ideas and maybe want to take it in a different direction. I don't know. Uh-huh. But I think this is... because I was just sort of expecting them to hire someone who didn't really have... who had a lot of credits on a lot of different kind of decently successful blockbusters, you know?
But that's not what I was kind
of expecting them to get. And this is kind of, oh, this is sort of interesting. And so I think on the whole, my expectations for the film have gone up as a result of this. And especially since I watched Finding Neverland just last night, actually, and it made me cry. That's a good sign. And I thought it was really well done, and especially just a lot of the themes of sort of getting your childhood back and there being something about the spirit of childhood you should hang on to really resonated with me. It kind of resonated with me as a Narnia fan, honestly. And then listening to him on the commentary, he just sounds like a really interesting guy. And Life of Pi, I didn't love as much as most people, but definitely a very interesting movie, very difficult story to tell.
I will simply say this, you know, like, okay, Rillian, this latest bit of news, is this an indicator they are in the right direction or the wrong direction? I'd say it's an indicator they're in the right direction. Nothing's conclusive.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't expect a piece of news to be, oh, we got this piece of news. We can just relax now. It's all good.
Yeah.
Douglas Gresham.
Well, there'd be no fun in that, would there?
I'd say definitely this is an indicator that it's, you know, positive. I'd agree with you, Glenn, but I definitely, you know, am I still hesitant? Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, but, you know, I'm kind of...
It sure sounds like good news.
I would say cautiously optimistic, and the reason why I would say that is I definitely think hiring this screenwriter is definitely a step in the right direction. However, what it's... just from a purely, like, practical standpoint, the fact that he's been the first person hired tells me that the producer probably wants him to do a treatment of the script, which they will then use to shop around for a director. So I don't know if he will stay actively involved in the project terribly long. Just because I think the directors tend to like to bring in their own team as far as that's concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, it's a great place to start for sure. And if he could, you know, if you got a good core to start on, no matter whose hands it's going into, at least you have, you know, a solid screenplay to go off of. So that's where I'm, right. That's where I'm standing right now.
Well, and again, the thing is with, like, kind of like what I said, I think this is speaking to potential directors. I think this is trying to give it more legitimacy because
it's certainly doing that for fans. I think,
yeah, you know, because there are going to be some, there are going to be some directors out there who are the literary adaptation kind of guys. I'm actually thinking more along the lines of guys like, are guys with kind of an artist mindset. You know, Del Toro would be in this camp. Michael Bay would not. You know what I'm saying? but there are some directors, they're going to be looking at Narnia.
And just sorry, by the way, because I think that's a good distinction. That's like, look, I just think that, no disrespect to anyone, but most people would tend to associate him more with Guillermo del Toro, who wrote and directed, mm-hmm. who directed Pan's Labyrinth, than they would with Michael Bay, who directed Transformers.
Who is one of the...
That's what I'm saying.
Also, Michael Bay is one of the Hollywood money launderers.
Yeah.
He just, you know, just spews money. But, no, my point is... and you guys are making me forget, but...
What's your point?
No, the thing is... you know, there are some directors out there that are looking at Narnia and they're saying, boy, these are almost timeless children's classics that deserve to be treated well. And maybe they want to, you know, maybe they want to change the story. Maybe they will have their own way of how they would want to do it. But there's maybe a certain amount of respect that they give to the literature. And they're looking at the Narnia franchise and they're seeing a decline both in the receptivity of fans, in the receptivity from the general public, the receptivity by the critics. They're just seeing kind of a decline, and they would not be eager to attach their career to a fourth film.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I think whether it's the producer choice and certainly the screenwriter choice, is it's speaking to the industry, whether it's the establishment industry or the kind of independent industry as well, speaking to them saying, this is going to be different. We're treating this with respect and giving it some credibility. I think that's kind of what they're doing here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Jim Fannin, maybe he won't be attached to the film for very, maybe McGee will be a big part of the project.
I hope he will. Certainly the impression I get from the Finding Neverland commentary is that even while they were shooting, he was very involved and was very collaborative, had a great relationship with the director. So I hope we get something more like that.
Which I would prefer as well. But so the thing is, but still, I think he's giving an air of credibility to this as a project.
I'm excited. I'm trying to take Jim Fan's advice and not get too excited. I'm really trying, but I can't help but dream of what this could indicate. Obviously, when they give us a director, that's going to be probably the most telling thing.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I really have this generally very pleasant feeling about this. I have a pleasant feeling about this.
I don't have an unpleasant feeling about this. Let's put it that way.
really? And just
I didn't say it.
Michael Bay was chosen as director.
You said it, not me. I did not jinx this project.
What if Michael Bay was chosen? Way to smash everyone's hopes. Had the Lady of the Green Curl, instead of turning into a snake, turn into a dinosaur robot. No, let's end this on a good note. I think there's a lot of good reasons.
Just now, I was really having a good time, and then
I seriously was. I was like, man, I was sort of imagining, and there's images flashing through my eyes of, wow, what could this be? That Silverchair is such a book that means so much to me. What if they really made a wonderful, sincere, heartfelt adaptation of it? I have a good feeling about this.
I do as well.
And that's a good place to be. Further up and further in.
Further up and further in. And real quick, if people want to email us, I'm really at narniweb.com. Glummy, you are glumple at narniweb.com.
Yep.
And are you, Jim Fan, are you still webmaster at spareoom.net?
Yes.
And by the way, while we're talking about scripts, a lot of people forget there was a really early version of the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe script that surfaced in mid-2006, and I'm going to post a link to that in this description if you want to check it out.
Okay, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Even a sapling was once a tree. Even a sapling is still a tree.
Completely bungle that up.
Even a sapling is still a tree. There. Way to take a cheesy line and just mess it up.
Fantastic. All right,
this has been wonderfully nostalgic. Thank you, everyone. I'm looking forward to the next few years.